Backseat Producers, episode 193, Dr. Horrible's Sing-Along Blog.
Tony.
And this is Daryl.
And this is Sam.
And we are the Backseat Producers. Welcome, Sam.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, I'm taking a break from that video game news and reviews business.
That's nerdy.
Yeah, hey, it's good. It's good to be nerdy in this day and age.
That's true. Because we get to, like, podcast and whatnot.
Yep.
And play video
Turns
games.
Out.
And speaking of which, I love my microphone.
Yes, the microphone that picks up mouse farts from across the street.
Oh, God, no kidding.
But it also picks up the Scottish lullaby.
And the Japanese let's go get smashed that I'm drinking over here.
All right, so tonight we're going to talk about Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog.
Oh, yes, more of Wheaton's work.
Yes. Just to preview, next week we're talking about Let Me In, not Let the Right One In.
No, the American remake.
We're talking about the American version. Then it's going to be Sucker Punch. Mm-hmm. And there's been some discussion after that what's coming next. We may do our summer superhero dealio, or Adam has been pushing for Jennifer's Body.
I think you should do Seven.
Seven?
Seven?
Yes.
Seven. That's a grim.
David Fincher. Oh, it's good.
I know it's David Fincher.
I'll get ranty about that one.
I'd go for the recap of summer movies.
Yeah, well, at some point we're going to do the recap of the... Well, and we're just going to do summer superhero movies.
Because
we did that before.
Okay.
But T has asked to join us if we talk about superhero movies.
Okay.
So, yeah, we'll probably get him involved. So... I leave it up to the question mark of when they are available, when T is available. And I don't know if it's going to be T and Pip, or if just T. Or maybe it can be just Pip. That's fine, too, because she's fairly awesome. Actually, no, she's really awesome.
Yeah, there's no fairly about it.
No, and there's no fairly about it. She is fantastic.
She is.
This is true.
Because she shares T with us.
Yes.
She lets us share our man love with T.
Yes.
So. Big man love.
Sam, before we get too far in, you mentioned the video game podcast. You want to go ahead and pimp it?
Oh, yeah, I'll make with the pimping. I'm Sam the Telestus from the Way of the Game podcast. Enlightenment, one game at a time. Thewayofthegame.net.
And I can say that I am a regular listener of Way of the Game. I enjoy the podcast. I started listening because... Jonathan, who's with me on Backseat Box Office, is a host over there as well, and I stuck with it because you guys have you guys put together a good show.
Well, thank you. Since I'm the editor, I appreciate that.
I may have given you some editing tips. In fact, I think I have another one for you when we're done because it will help. It's helped me edit quicker.
Excellent. I could totally deal with this because that eats up one of my nights a week.
Yeah.
And Silent Girlfriend, as I mention on the show all the time, would love to have more of my time during the week.
Yep. That's a good thing. Getting the lady attention.
Indeed.
You know, I get my extra lady attention by inviting Julie to podcast with me once a week.
BSR!
Yep. We're actually releasing an episode this week, which is kind of cool. Anyway, so Dr. Horrible. Sam, high-level thoughts. What do you think of it?
Okay, so I've been a fan of Whedon's work since I was 18 years old. So I've watched all of Buffy, all of Angel, most of Dollhouse, Firefly, Serenity. So I'm pretty well-versed in his work. And when I'd heard about this, I was going, oh man, a sing-along blog, really? And then I watched it, and it was great. But you know what? Having watched that much Whedon, how was I not surprised at the way this was going to end?
Well, yeah.
That being said, I love musicals and stuff, and I like Joss's work. I'm a fan of this. I will put this on in the background when I'm cleaning around the apartment, when I'm cooking something with Silent Girlfriend. She digs it. It's good stuff.
Hey, there's nothing more motivational to cleaning the house than the song, A Man's Gotta Do What a Man's Gotta Do.
And My Eyes.
That's yeah. Good. Yep. Daryl.
I'm not kind of a Whedon fanboy. I like his stuff, but I don't go gaga all over it. I came to this kind of late. It had already been out for a while when I finally saw it, and I loved it. I mean, this it's so hard to find a musical that works anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
They just don't make them funny and tragic at the same time and actually have the damn thing work in such a short format.
True.
Not to mention that unless you live in certain areas of the country, a lot of the musicals that do fit that formula are really inaccessible. Unless right, they yeah. come on tour, and that's years after they come out, and only if they're successful.
Right.
Right, and they're usually the ones that are successful are the ones that are somewhat dumbed down for a general audience.
Yeah, they tend to be the more mainstream stuff.
Some of them, yeah.
Some of them are. Some of them are still on the edgier side, but yeah, this one's different, and I really liked it. I wouldn't categorize myself as a Whedon fanboy. I watched the Buffy movie when it came out. Never really watched the TV series, but when the TV series started, I was working the evening shift, so I pretty much stopped watching television. And for a number of years, and then by the time I actually got back to watching television, it was pre DVD sets of season, so you know I really couldn't catch back up on it. So I never really got into Buffy. I'm fully aware of it. I'm aware of most of the major storylines, but I've watched probably 10 minutes of 3 different episodes, and mostly because I'd switch past something. It's like, oh, what's this? Oh, it's Buffy. Okay, next. I watched all of Firefly as it aired, just because it looked like an interesting show. I had no
preconceptions clue. About it, yeah.
Yeah, I had no clue yeah. who Joss Whedon was. I had heard of him because of Buffy, but I didn't realize that that was his show until a couple of episodes in, and then I realized that he was behind the show. But I didn't realize his penchant for killing people off.
Yep.
You know, and granted, sometimes it's done for the right reasons, and sometimes it's done for fan service, but it's,
or just to get a rise out of
it. It's his go-to move. Yeah. It's his go-to move. I mean, some people, I've actually heard some people claim that he does it just to play the audience. Much the same way a comedian will work an audience with a joke. And once he gets a feel for what, like a comedian, once he gets a feel for what a particular audience is going to feel is funny, he'll play to that bend. With Joss, he figures out which characters people love and
emotionally invests themselves in
and tortures those characters the most.
See, I wouldn't be surprised if he, when he writes characters in his head, like he doesn't tell anyone, he picks like 2 or 3 and he goes, I'm going to make people love you, and then I'm going to rip the teddy bear away. I think he designs a couple characters with that in mind when they're introduced.
It wouldn't surprise me, and it wouldn't surprise me if he just tosses all the characters on the table and see which ones people gravitate toward. Because he normally doesn't kill anybody off soon.
Oh no,
he lets things gestate.
Bye.
Right, right. He lets the characters gestate and grow in front of you, and it gets pretty obvious which ones are the ones that are.
Well, I'll throw this out to y'all. Since everybody knows this is his sort of his signature move and his mode of operation. Isn't he in danger of like becoming a cliche of all his stuff because they sit there and expect it to happen? And sometime, if he ever, I guess, does another TV show or movie or whatever,
Wouldn't they be terribly disappointed if he didn't do it?
I want to know who he's going to kill off in the Avengers movie.
See, if he does that, it's going to piss me off. Because it's like, really? It's not, this becomes your trope?
It's not his to do in the Avengers.
Well, no, that's too much of a... There's too much canon there to work.
But you know what? Really? Canon with Marvel Comics and killing people off?
That's true.
I know. But the thing is, in comics, no one ever dies.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Never stays dead very long.
Yeah, and when you look at, like in Serenity, the big thing was Wash being killed.
And, spoiler!
Hey, you know what? Episode 18 of Fanboy Smackdown, we talked about it, so spoilers are off for that one. Yeah, and that episode is still one of the most consistently downloaded episodes of this podcast.
I have not downloaded that. I may have to get a copy.
It's crazy. Actually, that was recorded at Archon.
Nice.
5 years ago. With the death of Wash, I know a lot of people... I even saw somebody today talking about Serenity and how people are complaining that they want Firefly back on the air and that they, you know, Wash didn't really... I choose to believe Wash didn't die and, you know, a bunch of other crap
really?
Like that. And it's like, you know what? That show was on the air 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago. In two more years, there will have been more years past than episodes aired. So let's move on. Everyone associated with it is doing other things.
Right.
Let's just
and they're being successful.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And the thing with Wash, and one thing that I said, and I kind of riled some people off and pissed them off when I said it. I said Wash's death was perfect for storytelling. For one thing, he had reached the point in his story that it was over. He had succeeded. His character wasn't going to go any farther unless it was in terms of his relationship with Zoe. That character had reached his apex
as an individual.
As an individual. Anything else he would have done would have gone.
He left enough nebulous room in the character's backstories that if a writer really gravitated toward Wash as a character, I bet that they could have come up with something that could have made him the focus of an entire story arc in later seasons if it would have survived.
Seasons.
I don't buy that his character was played
out. Wait a minute. Wait. You're talking about television. Because this happened in the movie. And from there, it was obvious they were never going back to television. So, in terms of the movie, though, they had too many characters. They had to cut some fat in the number of characters they had. They can't consistently deliver decent stories with that many characters if they're going to have more movies. Because the hope was that they would have a second and possibly a third movie. And to continue on with Shepherd Book and Wash, those characters were
baggage.
were redundant.
How so? How are they redundant? How did they both fulfill the exact same role?
They weren't redundant with each other, but Shepherd Book's character was as a spiritual guide for Mao, and the plot of the story of Serenity told the story of Mao's faith, and that was through the character of the operative, and the Shepherd character passed on to the operative character, and the operative became in a way Mao's spiritual guide. And Wash, there were other characters that were comic relief. Jane was redundant to Wash in comic relief, and now in different ways. But they were both comic relief characters.
The role of Wash, all those characters have dual roles. They fulfill more than one slot within a quote-unquote D&D party, right? If you look at the roles characters fulfill.
Right.
Wash was a comedic character, but he's also a foil because he has a relationship with Zoe in the same way that Mal shares a strong relationship with Zoe, mm-hmm. but it's of a very different nature, and they based an episode around that dissonance between the differences in their relationships.
Right.
Okay, so he was more than that. Jane, as we find out in Firefly, is the one character who is a little bit of a wild card.
Yep.
Because in what was the name of the episode? It's the name of a planet. What's the one where he almost turns on him?
I know which one you're talking about, but I don't remember.
I can't remember what it's called. I'd have to wiki it. But in that episode where he says the money was too good, and Mal's about to space him. He says the money was too good. The money was too good. It shows he has a weakness and that this is going to come back to haunt them. It plants the seed that this will come back to haunt the crew of Serenity in the future.
Mm-hmm.
That is a very different role between Wash and Jane.
Also, and I think this is more to the point, the dynamic of the couple of Wash and Zoe was interesting to a point, but it had almost reached a point of stagnation that by pulling away her anchor, who was Wash? Wash is the one who kept her grounded, who kept her from becoming a robot.
Yeah, to keep her from becoming heartless, because right. You see a little bit of it at the end of Serenity.
Yeah, at the end of Serenity, it's she is fighting against her nature to that she wants to become a robot.
Yeah, to be cold and shut herself down.
There's the great the metaphorical speech that the dialogue between her and Mal at the end, where he asks how the ship is, and she gives this description of, well, she's beaten, she's not broken, she'll pull through, and you know that
we're not talking about the ship
at all. You know, it's it's a great way that those two characters can communicate without being direct.
But the thing is, that's the way that they interact, because their relationship is very similar to two close friends of the same sex.
Mm-hmm.
Than it is, because there's if there was any attraction there, they don't give any hints of it, and they save that seed for a further season. You know, they save that idea. But right. I think that there could definitely be, if there were further seasons, some things about how Zoe maybe had a war buddy that she was, you know, nailing on the side when she was a soldier who died and then didn't die. There's an episode or a series of episodes. You could have maybe Wash was married before and didn't say anything about it. You've got material there that gives those characters more depth.
But we're no longer talking about television seasons. Once the Serenity movie happens, there's no more TV.
But you've rebooted the whole idea now.
Yeah. The story has changed fundamentally, because you're also talking about a completely different medium.
This is true. And you have to it has to tell the complete story from start to finish with maybe a little bit of background if it is a tie-in similar to the way this movie was.
Right.
That because if you don't give the background, you end up with a movie like Ultraviolet, where interesting idea, cool action, but absolutely no context on what the hell is going on.
Yeah, I never saw that one.
Yeah, don't bother.
Yeah, that's
unless you want some more Mia Jovovich with guns.
Yeah, I'm not. She doesn't do it for me as much as some others.
Yeah,
I would take Felicia Day. I would take Felicia Day over Mila Jovovich.
Oh God, she's so tiny. Oh, great. Ooh. Transition though, back to Dr. Horrible.
Yeah. All right, so Dr. Horrible. Another thing is, before we actually talk about Dr. Horrible, I will say
that you are blue balling me here.
Commentary, the musical, is fabulous. It's absolutely worth watching, and in many ways, it is superior to Dr. Horrible, because I think the music is more accessible, and it's more, you can more listen to the music without the accompanying video, because it does not rely on the accompanying video the way the musical, the sing-along blog, really interacts with the visual.
I don't buy that because
you haven't listened to it yet.
All musicals tie into the visuals of it. very few musicals are basically songs that are soliloquies. There's generally something happening on stage, because the idea of a song is that it continues to tell the story or gives insight into something a character is feeling or planning to do.
Right.
And, right. And there's a couple of good scenes in there where you have Dr. Horrible. He's doing his the one scene where Captain Hammer and Penny are going out in the laundry scene, and he's just now found out that Penny and Captain Hammer are dating, and instead of just having his inner dialogue, he's down there kind of like dancing around them at the time, singing the song. And if you tried to do that just as a dialogue, it would just make no sense. But if he's singing, if we now see, okay, this is his inner dialogue, and this is his emotions, and it makes perfect sense. In a musical, you can have several voices going off, or several songs going off at the same time, and they still are all understandable, as opposed to just dialogue, which becomes babble.
Right, but what I'm...
Excuse me. Still don't buy that.
What I'm saying, though, is the music from Commentary and Musical stands aside and
it's a compliment rather than just a competition.
Right. Yeah. Right. It's something different. Now, it takes up the span of time that the sing-along blog does, because it runs as a commentary track.
Mm-hmm.
But with just a few rare exceptions, do they ever reference anything that is actively going on the screen? It is not part of the experience of watching it, but it comments on what's going on in the background in a comedic way, because they do make caricatures of Nathan Fillion, Felicia Day, Neil Patrick Harris, and a number of the other people who work behind the scenes. Every time Joss Whedon speaks up, he's like really morose and down. He's like talking about things that are dark and dreary, and then they just talk over him like, shut up, Joss. Just go back in your corner and write. You know, and Nathan's very boisterous and loud, and I'm better than everybody, and look at me, and he's very full of himself.
He channels the Captain Hammer character all the way through his commentary.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he lives that role.
And at one point during the musical, during the commentary, they're talking about how Nathan and Neil didn't get along at some point. So, but they found a common ground in an iPhone game, and how they were playing this game, and that's what brought them together, and now everybody's happy because they have this game, and there's some competition about who's doing best at the game, and so, I mean, it's crazy little silly stuff like that. At one point, they keep trying to talk to Felicia about what she's doing. She's like, I won't discuss my process. She sings a song about Nathan at one point, and she's like, it's all about the art. No, I try not to dreamily look at him. That's just acting. That's not me really thinking about how cute he is. Yeah, it's really good. It's really good. But it's interesting because you don't necessarily need to watch it along with the video track. The way some commentaries are, where they'll mention, oh yeah, the lighting in this scene, or yeah, it was really funny the way this thing happened. We didn't mean for it to, but it, you know.
Yes, and how many musicals would have a musical commentary track?
Exactly, that works, and that's right? Just it. It works, and
yeah,
it's fun. It is fun to listen to. It's very meta. So now on to the story.
On to acting.
Acting.
Hello.
Whatever. What, are we going to follow some method?
Some pattern that may or may not have been established in the past?
Whatever. All right, so, acting. Sam, what do you think?
You know, Neil Patrick Harris is... I'm so glad to see that this guy got more work. Like, he really just busted out again. You know, he had Doogie Howser, and then he kind of busted out again in Harold and Kumar, because they make him out to be some type of metahuman, and then he shows up in How I Met Your Mother, and he continues to get more work, and that's fantastic. He's very talented. He can sing. He can dance. And I enjoyed the hell out of him as Billy / Dr. Horrible.
He's fantastic. He's fantastic in the role. He plays both the ridiculous caricature of an evil supervillain and that nerdy guy who just likes the girl in the laundromat.
Yep.
And you totally buy both sides of him.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yes, his secret identity is the nerdy guy at the laundromat, where his real personality is Dr. Horrible. Wannabe.
Yeah.
See, I think that's how he wants to be, but he can't leave his humanity behind. And that's what makes him such a convincing character, because he's real.
Right. When he gets the letter from Bad Horse saying that he has to commit some sort of horrible crime in order to be considered, he's kind of taken aback, says a murder would be fine.
Yeah.
It's kind of, let's, maybe I can do something else just as horrible. And of course he telegraphs the whole thing and loses out again.
Hourglass knows a kid who grows up to be president. You could kill him. Do I even know you?
Yeah. So Simon Helberg plays Moist.
Oh, Moist. That is such a horrible name for a supervillain.
I actually know grown adults that dislike the word Moist. It skeeves them out. Just hearing the word Moist skeeves them out.
And I'm betting these people watched Dead Like Me when they were younger.
I don't.
This is my mother. She finds the word Moist pornographic.
No, I don't think that was the case, but yeah, that it messes with them. And it's such a great name because it's like you just get the idea that this guy is just skeevy. And Simon Helberg just has that look about him.
He does. But he plays functionally the same character in Big Bang Theory.
Right.
He's just less sweaty.
Yes.
And more horny.
I think he's actually a little more palatable as Moist.
He is, but that's because Wolowitz is so over the top. Like,
yeah.
He's a character, like every character in that is a hyper stereotype of different individuals in the nerd culture. And what's scary is that a lot of people see Big Bang Theory and say, I know these people. I know the stereotype this is based off of.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know the guy that comes off as skeevy, but may not necessarily be that way.
Right.
It's just he doesn't know any better.
Well, there's one thing also about Moist, which is kind of interesting in his character, is he's satisfied with his powers.
He's totally okay with his role in life.
Yeah. Whereas Dr. Horrible, of course, wants to achieve bigger. And, of course, we have the opposite of both of them, which is Captain Hammer, who is so over the top and overconfident and obnoxious about it because he knows he's invincible.
He's invincible, he's super strong, and he's a super douche.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It's like Superman if he had, you know, not grown up with decent parents. Like if he had grown up in New York. With an alcoholic father and an abandoned mother.
Yeah, he's got superpowers. He knows he's good looking. He knows the ladies swoon. He knows he can get laid at the drop of a hat, and he plays on that.
They say you can do the weird stuff. You sleep with the same chick twice.
Yes.
Really?
and I love at that point when the chorus of groupies say, "We'll do the weird stuff." Beautiful. That is just brilliant.
Oh, that was fantastic.
The Greek chorus of groupies was brilliant. I thought that was a really great touch because they added an interesting depth to see how the rest of the world viewed some of these events and some of these characters.
See, I think even something, and I know this movie is a sore subject amongst the BSP crowd, but the way that the Boondock Saints ends, where they have all these people who have different views about what's going on, I think that would be really cool, but it is hard to give that shape within the scope of the musical. And maybe they do give it in the final scene of Act 3 about how there are people that are like, oh, Captain Hammer's awesome, and then eventually you know, Dr. Horrible's awesome, and then people who are just, oh my God, I want to get out of here.
Well, it's not so much the last scene that they start realizing, like, this guy's a douche. He's not only obnoxious about it, he's loud. I mean, even you see Penny trying to slink away, I don't really know this guy. I mean,
His big speech at the end.
Mm-hmm. Hey, if I was next to Wonder Woman and she was like, yeah, you see that little hot piece over there sitting in the chair? Yeah, I rode that hard. I'd be like, I'm uncomfortable.
Right.
Yes, but it would not. Yeah, and the other thing is, not only am I uncomfortable with it, I'm sitting here listening to him broadcast it over all the airwaves simultaneously. I mean, you can see how phony he is when he's dedicating the homeless center.
That was horrible.
Yes, like that smelly guy over there.
He smells like poo. And then Felicia Day plays the kind of mousy, quiet, idealistic early 20s woman that I'm sure we all know an example of her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that she's idealistic, she's quiet, but she's got a fierce passion about her. And she doesn't show it to most people, and it's only when she's on that she really that passion really comes alive in her. And for her, her big thing is the homeless, trying to help the homeless. And you know, she's just that mousy girl at the laundry until Billy runs into her on the street and she's trying to collect signatures, and she is just vibrant. She is just a completely different person because she's passionate about something. And it's at that point that she completely shuts down because she's interacting with him, for one. And then when everything goes down where he tries to hijack the van and interferes with it, almost kills her, but the van stops. And
well, he manages to get control of the van at the last second and stop it, of course, making
but Hammer it appears look, that
Hammer stops
Hammer it. Stops it, so it makes him look like the hero. And she's already writing. She's on this different level than Billy normally sees her at, where mm-hmm. she's very interested. She's into what she's doing. She's passionate. And it just kind of carries over, and as luck would have it, it works out well for Hammer.
Mm-hmm. See, I don't buy that.
Hammer turns on the charm at that point. Of course, all the women swoon for him initially.
Well, and it also looks like he saves her life.
Right.
I mean, there's the misdirection that he mm-hmm. saved her life.
See, I don't buy that she's this passionate do-gooder, because she's asking for signatures, but the way in which she presents herself, her body language, is very timid. She's very, you know, will you sign? No?
Please?
Okay. And, you know, she has this very pulled back, this very shy, this very self-conscious type feel about her, not only in her tone of her voice, but in her body language. And now part of the tone of voice could be that when Felicia Day sings, she's very quiet, and that's consistent throughout the entire piece.
Right.
But her body language says, you know, she won't follow people. I've seen the people who are aggressive and want to get you to sign signatures.
Oh,
she
yeah.
doesn't have that fire.
No,
now,
but
she's passionate, but she isn't.
She's not aggressive. Not
forward with it.
She's never aggressive.
Yeah, but she's, you know, she wants to help the homeless, and that becomes more clear through other pieces that she sings. But when she's out in public trying to get that, those signatures, that does not come across.
Yeah, but she approached some guy in an alley. So,
well, that's because she recognized him.
Yeah,
she recognized Billy.
That's true.
Oh, he said, "Oh, you were the guy at the laundromat yesterday." So she does. She kind of has a little no apprehension about approaching him.
Right.
And of course, Billy, being terribly distracted by his own little machinations, he mentions, "Of all the times she had to talk to me, it would be now.
Why now?
Why now?"
Which I guess now we're kind of rolling.
The thing is, instead of rolling with it, he goes back and tries to hijack the Wonderflonium because he's more passionate about his project than she is about hers.
As much as he wants a girlfriend and mm-hmm. he likes her and she is an object of desire for him,
yeah, he wants an evil not, League of
that
Evil.
That is not
much
his goal.
Right,
that is not his goal.
His goal is to be in the evil League of Evil and be taken seriously.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the the beautiful tragedies of the character is that it's obvious that that is his primary goal. But his secondary goal at some point almost subverts his primary goal.
Mm-hmm.
And well,
it's Penny's and Hammer's relationship which drives him to suddenly get serious about all his gadgets. I mean, before that, you know, he's just playing around with it, and they're not very very frightening or devastating or anything else until he finally says, "Okay, now I gotta amp it up. I get the Wonderflonium. I got the freeze ray going." And after he's enraged enough with Penny's and Hammer's relationship, he says, "Okay, I'm amping it up. I make the stun gun is now the death ray."
Well, part of that also comes from the fact that Hammer causes him to fail.
Mm-hmm. In front of Penny.
In front of Penny. And
yeah.
And well, in front of Penny is part of it, but Hammer has consistently, and they show a little montage.
Yeah, he's always a failure. Yeah.
They set up that there's a history between
them too.
The Doctor and Captain Hammer. They
right.
set up that Billy has wanted to become a supervillain for quite some time, that this has been something he's focused his mind on. He set up a video blog, which I guess transitions really well into the synopsis.
Yes.
That he has a video blog, and he does some exposition. He says, you know, I'm Dr. Horrible. I have a PhD in horribleness. I'm reading emails, and it gives some background that you know, he has a pattern, that he has done this blog for a while. He has been trying to become a certified supervillain.
Right.
Or at least one that's being taken seriously.
Yeah, and somebody asks him in one of the emails he reads about the she you talk about, she will eventually be mine, she will notice me. And he goes into the first piece of the musical, My Freeze Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And it's expositional mostly, but it's explaining his unrequited, or not necessarily unrequited, but unexpressed love for hot brunette in the laundromat.
Yes.
Right. He wants somebody to notice him, and he wants them to take him seriously. But for a guy who wants to be taken seriously, he sure has a big stumbling block just talking to the girl in the laundromat. So that's kind of such a nice little dichotomy. Here we have somebody who wants to be noticed, and at the same time, can't find the words to talk to the girl next door because
right.
he's too shy. So how can you know, it's the dichotomy is he wants to be a name, but yet he's too shy to even speak up.
Well, I think the persona of Dr. Horrible allows him to distance himself from his self-consciousness about being Billy. And he's, because you notice the way in which he holds himself and the way in which he speaks,
mm-hmm.
it's like he's acting, but I think that he feels more comfortable as Dr. Horrible.
Yeah, playing the role of Dr. Horrible.
It's an effect. It's an effect that actually they show really brilliantly in the Spider-Man story, where Peter Parker as Peter Parker is shy. He's more reserved. He's not as open and upfront. As soon as he puts the mask on, he becomes a wisecracker. He'll insult people that are 10 times his size and 3 times his power level, who could literally literally squash him like a bug just to get a rise out of them.
Well, that's one of the tenets of costuming is once you put on the costume, you essentially become a different person. Because you're no longer presenting this public face of yourself. You're now playing the role of something else.
Right.
It's the basic idea of a mask, mm-hmm. of taking on the persona of something else.
Or at least cloaking yourself to, you know, you're anonymizing yourself.
Yep.
It allows you to perhaps allows the second self to come out.
And he is a different person when he's wearing the Dr.
Right.
Horrible
he's
costume.
A lot more,
yeah.
He stands up a lot straighter. He's a lot more forward in his, as I say, his body language.
He's more confident. He's more outspoken. Even if it comes off as goofy,
mm-hmm.
in some ways,
there's a certain energy behind it.
He's passionate.
He turns from being an introvert to an extrovert, mm-hmm. just by wearing the costume.
Yeah.
Funny side note, have you seen Neil Patrick Harris's Twitter avatar in the last couple of days? It's a Smurf dressed as Dr. Horrible. It's nice. A drawing of a Smurf dressed as Dr. Horrible. I looked it up today because I actually went on Twitter today and just as on a lark, I said, yeah, we're talking about Dr. Horrible tonight. I wonder if Nathan Fillion, Felicia Day, or Neil Patrick Harris, and I used all their Twitter names, will join us or at least call in a voicemail. And I put the voicemail number out there.
Nice.
But I wasn't following Neil Patrick Harris before that, and so I had to actually go make sure I had his correct Twitter name. And when doing so, I noticed the Twitter avatar, and I thought that was mighty funny. Listed.
Hey, what can I say? A Smurf's got to do what a Smurf's got to do.
Yeah. Papa Smurf says.
So that pretty much takes care of the acting. Because there was really the four characters. There were the little side pieces, the chorus of groupies.
Well, you have the Bad Horse Chorus, and
the Bad Horse Chorus. Like that's right where we're at in the story. Because like we kind of half transitioned into plot, and yeah. Tony's pulling it back.
Whatever.
Well, yeah,
we don't do plot anymore. We don't do plot anymore around here. Have you not listened to a show recently? We have substituted the plot segment for at the end we talk about who do we think this is for.
Hey, I'm all for that.
We've actually backed away from that recently.
I like Daryl's plot synopses. Daryl, I'm with you on that. I want to push that.
All right, so then next in the plot then.
So it cuts out of Freeze Ray when his roommate, Moist, comes home. That word makes me laugh every time. And they have mail, and he notices one of the oh so clever plot devices is a letter with a wax stamp from the Evil League of Evil, which is basically the Nega Justice League,
right?
And hence the aforementioned Bad Horse Chorus of three heavily mustached cowboys. More exposition about okay, this is what you have to do to get into the Evil League of Evil.
Yeah, and basically the Bad Horse Chorus. Read the letter.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, they're the ones that
read the inner dialogue. He's thinking, or as he's reading this
letter. As he's reading the letter. So he was put up to the challenge. Now are we talking about? This is the second time he gets a letter from the Eagle.
No, it's the first time.
First one.
So okay. So he gets the letter the first time and he has to do something bad.
Yeah. So he's got a plan.
Right.
He's ready to rock. And he's like, okay, hey, I need this stuff. Wonderfalonium.
Yes.
I need it for my freeze ray.
Yeah.
So step one, acquire Wonderfalonium.
Right. So he attempts to do that. And attempting to do that, that's where he bumps into Penny again. Where before we had just seen her in the laundromat, here's the scene where we see her where she's trying to get the signature for the homeless shelter. And he is distracted.
And oh my God, she's talking to him.
Yes.
He is losing his mind.
Yeah, he's going crazy. The conflict there, he's just going nuts because he's trying to focus on the van and he's trying to talk to her and carry on any kind of communication with her. And he's not succeeding. He wouldn't succeed normally. He's actually probably better off that he's distracted because he actually has an excuse to speak, and his speaking is, hang on a second.
I'm texting.
I'm texting is very important.
It's very important. What texting is that important when Felicia Day is in front of you?
I don't know.
She should have been like, you're not texting. And just called him on it.
Yeah. I don't see words. I see arrows. What... Are you? Is this ASL texting or what? What's the deal here?
Oh, you made it weird, Tony.
And guess who shows up about this time?
Well, first of all, I want to know what app he's got on the iPhone that will control a van.
I want
van control.
Somebody, I remember shortly after this came out that somebody made an app that looked like. The Dr. Horrible app.
iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody actually made that app. So you could have that interface on your phone. Just I think when you hit things it like beeped and stuff. It didn't really do anything, but they made that interface. Yeah, the guard brings the Wonderflonium to the van takes off, and everything looks like it's going to go good, and then all of a sudden...
it's going great, and then giant douche jumps on top of the van.
And Nathan Fillion is just full-on hamming it up, just having a great time. He's posing, he's preening,
he's singing.
Singing. Yeah. That was so much fun when he jumped out. It's like, yes, this is awesome.
And you notice he's kind of got a little bit of his like flubber going on. Like he's wearing a t-shirt. And you're like, he's kind of fat, but
yeah,
he's still a superhero. There's hope for us all.
He can be lazy. I mean, look at who his villains are. Dr. Horrible? True. Come on. What do I have to do? I get laid. I eat. What?
Yeah, I don't have to work that hard.
I don't go to the gym. I just look this way.
Right.
I'm it just super happens. Powerful. Yes, and as Dr. Horrible is trying to gain control of the van that he's now disrupted, and Penny's distracting him even more. He's trying to control the van. We're listening to Captain Hammer preen himself and announce his presence. Our van, of course, careens out of control and nearly hits Penny.
Well, almost kills her.
Yes.
Captain Hammer is the one who causes it to go out of control by breaking the remote device.
Because he's an idiot.
Well, yeah.
Right. Instead of doing something like lifts the van's wheels off the ground, no, he smashes the one thing that's keeping it under control. So as it nearly hits Penny and he pushes her out of the way and Dr. Horrible regains control at the last second and stops the van. We now got Penny all doughy-eyed over
in the trash.
Yes, in the trash. Doughy-eyed with Captain Hammer's incredible aura.
Yeah, and while everyone's distracted, Horrible realized that he's been defeated in two ways. Because he was stopped from his mission, and now all of a sudden, Penny, who he saved... is doughy-eyed over Captain Hammer, who she thinks saved her. And so he does the only thing a good supervillain can do.
Salvage the situation.
He grabs the stuff and runs.
And he gets away.
He made
gets what he needed and gets the hell out of there.
Yeah. He's still working on primary mission number one. Primary mission is to get the freeze ray going. Because that's going to give him his big horrible act that he'll be able to win the day.
See, I think here is the first seed planted that when it comes down to it, Billy / Dr. Horrible is a supervillain first.
Yes.
And it's planting the seeds of this so that it does not surprise you later. And on top of this, this ends in probably the best final line of any episodic piece I've ever seen. Balls.
Yes. So, is that the end of Act 1 then?
Yeah, that is the end of Act 1 when he walks away and says balls and it goes black.
So, Act 2 begins and...
with my favorite song of the piece.
Which one is that?
That is My Eyes, where it's a duet between Penny and Billy, and Billy is talking about, you know, he's lamenting the he's pessimistic. He's talking about how there's no hope. You know, I can't remember the lyrics off the top of my head, but the misery and the general crappy human condition. And at the same time, Penny is singing of, you know, helping the homeless and optimism and hope and redemption. And what's so great about this song is that it laces so tightly together where all of the notes are the same, but the lyrics give completely opposite views on the world.
Right.
And it is so cool to hear it in a duet where Billy is talking about he doesn't know if he'll upset the status quo by throwing poison in the water main. And Penny, I forget what her equivalent is, but it has something to do with happiness and bunnies and shininess and homeless people eating food. I don't know.
Right.
But
his is about despair and hers is about hope.
It is. And it's fantastic because this is where I sort of buy the idea that, and this is the same thing I have with stand-up comedians, where the visual is part of the comedy.
Yes.
And part of some of the scenes you see where Penny and Captain Hammer are dating now. They're a couple.
Right.
And you see some awesome scenes in the homeless shelter where you've got Billy with a horribly fake mustache on, yes, serving soup to homeless, yes, people.
And shooting and staring daggers at the both of them.
And he's not even pouring soup in the bowl. He just opens it, lifts it up, and dumps the lid back in the soup and hands an empty bowl out.
Yeah.
Because he's sitting there fuming over them oogling each other. Now that scene is easy to miss too.
Oh, it's so great.
Yeah, if you're not paying attention to it, it's right there.
Yeah, that he suddenly, you know, he pushes the server out of the way, and he's sitting here with his obviously fake disguise, and he's staring daggers at the two of them, just sitting here, you know, making himself crazy.
For the records, gentlemen, Jeff Bailey pointed out to us in the chat room that this episode has now been recording longer than the actual film we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But much like Whedon fans of any color, shape, or age, we tend to wank endlessly along about Whedon's work much longer than the hours of content that he's produced.
Yeah, there's been what in the Serenity, in the Firefly Serenity universe, there has been arguably, because it's not that, it's not 15 hours. If you add commercials into it, it's been 15 hours of media produced, and some of it wasn't even aired.
Oh yeah, so just like what, Objects in Space never aired, or was it Heart of Gold?
A Heart of Gold didn't.
Heart of Gold never aired.
Yeah. So we've actually gotten to a point, and I think the first season of The Signal, the podcast The Signal, had more content in length of time that the media was presented than everything that was presented for Firefly and Serenity. And they've been going for like 5 or 6 seasons now.
But at the same time, how does Star Trek compare to that and Star Wars? About the amount of wankery based on, like, as compared to content.
Well, they're the granddaddies of them all.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're the big papas.
But by the same token, they have since then have gotten a lot more media presented. There's been a lot more media presented about Star Wars and Star Trek than was originally available.
Well, Star Trek's case, all the wanking that lasted for so many years that we, you know, colloquially put it, actually helped.
It helped
create
new media for it.
Well, create the climate that made it
a couple new series
for a whole new set of media.
For a whole new generation.
Yeah, I hate to use that horry term.
Oh, puns! What is this punny business?
Mm-hmm.
Stop. All right.
But the thing is, even in Dr. Horrible's case, the thing has run along now for, what, 3 years? And supposedly there is a sequel still in the percolation of it.
Where the hell are they going to go with a sequel?
It'd be interesting to see how they could take it. It's supposed to be, I think there's Dr. Horrible, The Wrath of Bad Horse or something like that.
See, if it's that, it's got to be, like, from an outside point of view, and I don't know. I don't want to wank about that. Well, I want to keep talking about the actual piece.
We have to wait to see, but let's get back to our original story. Is we end up with Dr. Horrible now trying to get the freeze rate going and do his horrible act that's going to get him into the
Evil.
And of course,
this is awesome. He's like, I've got an awesome plan. I'm going to wreck some shit. Peace, but not really. Click. And it clicks on, and he is beat to hell.
Apparently, the LAPD and Captain Hammer are subscribers to my block. Like, it never would be obvious to him.
And Captain Hammer threw a car at my head.
So not only is he humiliated in front of the general public, he's also humiliated in front of the Evil League of Evil.
So yeah. Here we get the Bad Horse reprise, where Bad Horse and his company are like, that was sad. Okay, yeah. if you've got even half a chance, you've got to gank somebody, period. Yeah. Or Bad Horse is going to do some horribly and potentially illegally, illegal, depending on what state you live in, acts to you.
Yeah, I've pulled up the liner notes just so we can more clearly play along, which are available for anybody listening at drhorrible.com. You can play along. All the lyrics are there. So this is where they basically, it's lined out. From here on out, there's going to be blood, and it may be yours. So, basically, you need to go kill somebody now.
Yeah.
If you want this, you got to kill somebody. And since you've gone this far, if you don't, we may just kill you. Which is...
Yeah, kill you in what way? Like a Mr. Hands type way?
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't think you want bad. You want to find out from Bad Horse.
A couple of the fans are going to get that reference, and they're going to shudder and make fun of me.
So, then we go into Penny's song. We get more of Penny's story and how you kind of understand a little more how she could be enamored with Captain Hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Because at first it's, you know, to the audience, he's a gigantic douche.
Oh yeah, he's douche tool.
Right.
He's a tool store.
Yeah, he's a douche hammer.
Douche hammer.
She seems like an intelligent girl, but she's dating this guy. Well, then we see how she's kind of being played by him. How behind her back he rolls her eyes at what she does. He's not really helpful. He's kind of a gigantic dick, or gigantic hammer, as the case would be.
Yeah. He's was so great. And I'm going to give her the hammer. He leaves. And then he comes back.
I don't mean the hammer.
Arguably the best line from the entire thing, from the entire show, the hammer is my penis.
Just so we're clear.
Just so we're clear.
I think the next song is my favorite, Brand New Day.
Oh, yeah, where mm-hmm. he's... and this is what, Daryl, you were talking about this earlier.
Yeah, where
about
he
how
is,
he is... Oh, there's a term for it, but he doesn't exist in the scene, but he's the focus of the scene.
Right, where he's essentially... he's doing his inner dialogue with standing next to Hammer and Penny, and he's basically... now thinking all of his, well, okay, this is, I mean, no more Mr. Nice Guy. I'm tired of being humiliated by you. I've been playing around before. Now I'm getting serious.
Mm-hmm.
Now it is business time. I am now Godzilla and stepping on you.
Yeah, the song kind of builds until you get to the point where it's a brand new day and the sun is high, all the birds are singing, that you're going to die. And it's like, shit just got real.
Well, the thing is, what lights his fuse so much is not only he's humiliated by Hammer again, but he's humiliated by Hammer in front of Penny, and he knows Hammer is basically just using Penny, and he's using that as a tool against him.
But the other thing is he feels threatened, because when he's in the laundromat... Mm-hmm. And Captain Hammer, you know, Penny says, well, he thought he'd come by today to meet you. And Billy is all of a sudden terrified. He's like, I gotta go. And he tries to leave, and Captain Hammer shows up, and he is obviously scared out of his mind.
Oh, yeah.
And then when Penny walks away, Captain
Hammer
says...
Well, that's because
he's
facing him as Billy and not Dr. Dr. Horrible.
And it's not on Billy's terms. And he's Captain Hammer says, to further pound that thought in, he goes, I know who you are. You're Dr. Horrible.
Yeah.
And I see what you got going on here. I see why you're crushing on her. Well, let me tell you what. Just to get at you, I'm going to take her home. I'm going to swoon. You'll woo her. And then I'm going to nail her because you can't. And it is at that point that Captain Hammer is no longer just a villain. You know, this disembodied antagonist. All of a sudden,
he's a rival.
As Tony said, it's personal, and this shit is real.
Yeah,
you're nailing the chick I want to hit. I want to get with, and I cannot let this shit stand.
Yeah, he at this point, the secondary mission becomes it changes, because at first it's just that he likes her and he wants to be around her and he wants her in his life. And now it's almost become, hey, you know what? We were kind of friends, and I'm kind of crushing on her, and it would be awesome if she was my girlfriend. Well, in kind of this innocent way. It's not seedy or
it's
creepy.
More innocent. Yeah.
It's very much a boyfriend. I really want a girlfriend. You know, like a 16-year-old has when they're thinking about their first girlfriend. It's not.
It is.
It's not that college, I want to go bang some chicks tonight kind of.
Well, the thing is, Penny and him have gotten a rather comfortable little relationship going that she can feel that she can talk to him about things.
Right.
And he's finally relaxing around her, and then all of a sudden, this 500-pound rock drops in his puddle.
Yeah, that is a great way to put it. It wrecks his worldview.
Well, it just wrecks his what little relationship he has with him is being ripped away. I mean, it's not only it's bad enough that he kicks his ass all the time, but to take this away from him too is just one thing too many.
Yeah,
interesting. But what's interesting is that he treats it in such an innocent way. He treats their relationship in such an innocent way, and then to have Captain Hammer come and sully that.
Yes.
He makes it dirty.
Yeah.
And
well, he hits home, because generally all the defeats that have happened between Captain Hammer and Billy's life have been through the persona of Captain Hammer, or through the persona of Dr. Horrible.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, Captain Hammer is making Billy's life difficult.
His whole life.
And that's too much. There is no segregation there. It's like when you've got a boss who's a dick. Right, he's an ass to you at work, and then all of a sudden
you find out he's dating your mom.
Yeah, he's dating your mom, or he moved in and he's the dick that's making, you know, noise complaints in your apartment, or he's complaining about your dog crapping in the yard, or about, you know, having, you know it is too close to home, and it is now time to lay down the pain.
Yes.
And he finally at this point gets serious. No more playing around. But being Dr. Horrible, he becomes Dr. Horrible.
Well, I wouldn't say that, because there's still the segregation of Billy and Dr. Horrible.
He's now making the transition. He's getting ready to leave behind all the half attempts.
Well, at this point, I think his motivation changes from his mission.
Mm-hmm.
Veers off course.
Well, he
really
veers,
really if you look his mission,
I don't buy
well,
he veers off course.
Wait.
It changes. He does veer off course.
Wait a minute. Let me finish my thought. Okay. So his course, his primary course through this is to become a member of the Evil League of Evil.
Yes.
And Penny is that's the mission for Dr. Horrible.
That's icing on a cake.
Penny is the mission for Billy. If we're going to take the separate characters. So, but clearly, he wants to be Dr. Horrible.
Yeah, we've established that is the more important piece in his life.
And what happens now is the persona of Billy now becomes dominant in a way, because now Billy wants to protect Penny. And Billy wants to get noticed by Penny. And Billy realizes that as Dr. Horrible, Penny will notice him. Penny will see him, not necessarily be attracted to him, not necessarily be enamored with him, not necessarily even like him, but will see him and will understand that he's not a fool. He's not someone that you can just
kick around
and be pushed to the side, which is kind of how he feels at that moment. It's not the truth, but that's his perception of what's going on because of how he's being treated by Hammer. So he kind of veers off course of what his mission is, because now it's no longer about becoming a member of the Evil League of Evil.
It's killing.
It's
Dr.
about
Hammer.
Impressing. It's about impressing, and being noticed by Penny.
Mm-hmm.
That has become his motivation.
And also to save Penny from Dr. Hammer.
Right.
See, I think all of it starts to come together, and it becomes a unification goal. If he can, number one, kill Captain Hammer. Then, therefore, number two, he gets into the Evil League of Evil. And number three is able to impress Penny, showing, I am the bigger man than the man you are dating, which is a very instinctual caveman type thing. You are dating guy who holds club. I'm going to go to guy who holds club and crush his face. Therefore, I am obviously the better mate.
Well,
So it unifies all his goals into one path.
He
Unfortunately,
also,
things don't go that way.
He also sees something that's not exactly true. He sees that Penny is attracted to this guy who he sees is a gigantic douche.
Yep.
She doesn't see that he's a gigantic douche, so nope. Part of this is, hey, if she wants a gigantic douche, I will be gigantic.
I will be God douching, or Lord Douchington.
Yeah. He, and in the, one of the last chorus in, I'm not, the last verse in A Brand New Day, and Penny will see the evil me, not a joke, not a dork, not a failure, and she may cry, but her tears will dry when I hand her the keys to a shiny new Australia. But it shows just how wrong he is in his perception of her relationship with Hammer.
Yep.
He sees it as, hey, yeah, you know what? She'll be upset, but once I hand her the prize, she'll be fine with it. Because that's what he sees her as now.
Well, he says, his idea is power is essentially what
What she's impressed with, right.
And that is not the case.
That is not the case.
He doesn't see it,
but he doesn't see it.
He's a dork.
Yes. Because he really is a dork. Because he really is a failure.
Well, not only that.
He is not a failure. He's not.
At that point,
there are a lot of people who are famously unsuccessful with women who aren't failures, and I think he fits into this category.
Yeah, his mind, he thinks he is, but the only way he can get back on top is to essentially eliminate a rival and also show her that he can be just as powerful as Hammer can, only in a negative way.
Which goes back to the instinctual, I will prove that I'm the better mate.
Mm-hmm.
I will prove that I'm the bigger douche.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, yes. So we move into Act 3, where we start out with the song So They Say, which is a montage between Dr. Horrible planning his death ray and getting his revenge, between Penny lamenting the fact that Billy has disappeared, and between Captain Hammer basically phoning it in that he is the city's new hero, that he's not only stopping supervillains, but he's being constructive.
He's doing something good for the... He's giving something back to the community.
Yeah, that he's not just, you know, Superman, who is disconnected from the populace. You know, he shows up, saves things, and then runs away. And he is present. He is a public figure.
This has probably one of my favorite little back-and-forth sequences when he's talking about, I might just sleep with the same girl twice because I hear when I sleep with them twice, they do the weird stuff. And then the groupie's like, we do the weird stuff.
Hey, let's do that right away.
That cracks me up every time.
But it's so true. It is so true that, like you hear about stories from, like, the Rolling Stones and from Motley Crue. The groupies, oh, Lord.
Right.
They'll do whatever you want if you are Mick Jagger.
Yeah,
there could be a giraffe involved. They're in.
There's a term for those people. They're starfuckers.
Thank you, Trent Reznor.
That's a term that predated Trent Reznor decades.
But he made it mainstream.
Yeah.
I mean that's what that video's about, which, by the way, the video, there's a twist in it and it's creepy.
I don't think I've seen that video.
There's this really hot leggy chick that is messing around with him. Looks like she's going down on him. Turns out it's Marilyn Manson.
Nice.
Oh, man, that would
nice.
Mess up your head.
Yeah, it is definitely probably the biggest switcheroo I've ever seen.
That would mess up your head for a long time.
Oh, it did. Sweet Dreams Are Made of This is uncomfortably familiar to me. So it cuts to kind of the final scene. Like, one of the things that's really interesting about the last act of this is that most of it takes place on one set.
Yes. And that's different for how the first two acts have gone. The first two acts took place in multiple locations. There was a lot of build up. Everything kind of built up to the third act.
Which is great, which is exactly the way it should go in a non-Shakespearean type piece of work.
Yes.
And so you build up and climax right at the end of an epilogue. And there's a term for that, but I am not educated enough in the ways of English and stories to give you the proper technical term for it. But I know it's not Shakespeare because he peaks in the third act and then it's all downhill from there. And then either people get married or people die. So it opens up on a sort of ceremony of Captain Hammer getting a statue, talking about a new homeless shelter. It's looking like it's going to be an awesome day. And Captain Hammer sings a rather corny, horrible song.
Well, it's all great until Captain Hammer opens his mouth and reveals what he truly is about.
Oh, yeah, douchiness.
And at that point, Penny starts to realize this guy is the biggest douche and tries to slink off the stage. And then guess who pops in?
And it is slinking. It is that dog that's like, this is not good, man. And just tail between legs, total submissive look, creeps out of the spotlight.
Yeah, the song where he's really creeping is Everyone's a Hero. And the great part of that one is when he's talking about all the different muscles that he learned he could flex from her.
The deltoid of passion.
The deltoids of compassion. There's the abs of being kind. It's not enough to bash in heads. You've got to bash in minds. It really shows you this guy has no clue what the hell's going on. He is just... He wants to get laid. He wants to be popular. He wants people to give things to him.
He's a jock.
Yeah.
He's the dude he is totally that is hanging a jock. Out with the
overpowered one, too.
That is like, yeah, I totally agree with you. Because when we get home tonight, you're going to blah, 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 blah about whatever you care about. And then it is business time.
Right.
Yeah. And you're going to – all that pent-up frustration about not being able to get the man to see what's going on is going to be done on my junk.
Daryl makes a good point that he says Captain Hammer's the jock. And you can relate this totally to the high school cliques where you've got Captain Hammer's the jock.
Yep.
Felicia Day is that nerdy chick in the library who she's kind of cute in that mousy kind of way. And that geeky guy who works in the AV department likes her.
Mm-hmm.
But he thinks he's going to be a movie star. He thinks he's going to direct feature films when he gets out of high school.
He thinks he's going to be Christopher Nolan.
Right, right, right. But he just needs to get in with the cool kids. He needs to do that one thing that's going to get him in with the cool kids and get him to get invited to the college party. And I mean that sets up Captain Hammer's the jock, Felicia Day's the nerdy girl, Dr. Horrible is the AV geek, and the Evil League of Evil is that college group that is just like they're goading him on to do more and more terrible things in a hazing process that is ridiculous and uncomfortable and unnecessary. Mm-hmm. That he doesn't need to prove himself to them, but for some weird reason he feels he has to.
Because his ego says, I have to do this.
Right.
Yep.
And of course it all works out badly.
Yep, because the statue cloth comes off, and it is not, in fact, a statue of Captain Hammer, and it is Dr. Horrible. And it's at this point you see that you feel the transition, because as soon as the freeze ray hits, the music stops, and it is silent until you hear the perfected laugh.
Yes, that he's been working on.
Yep, since the first... He talks about it in the very first blog entry about... It's all about the laugh. You know, when he tries, he kind of clears his throat and fails a couple times. And now he's got it.
Yep.
You hear it and you go, well, that's right up there with Dr. Doom.
Right. And this is where the passion comes in. He's finally got the passion and the incentive that this is going to go. I've got everything lined up and I've got the stage. And now I'm going to show everybody what I'm about. And hey, the freeze ray works.
Yep, because Captain Hammer, not moving. He is paused.
Yep.
And he grabs his, I believe, his death ray, and he starts moving through the crowd singing Slipping, and he is quiet and kind of, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And then he drops the bomb and starts shooting holes in the ceiling, and people are losing their minds.
Yeah,
until he stops to say two R's and horrible to a reporter.
And that's the fun thing about the reporter. She's still taking notes all the time that all this is going on. The only one in the whole room that isn't trying to get out.
What I love is he makes the classic villain mistake. He monologues.
He does, but then he gets up and he's got the chance. The death ray is pointed at Frozen, Cat and Hammer, and he chokes. He chokes. He chokes hard, and the freeze ray fails.
Yeah. The freeze ray fails. Captain Hammer
recovers.
Wakes up, and it's ass kicking time.
And it punches him in the face, grabs the death ray, and then gives him the finger.
Yeah.
It's like, awesome. You are a huge douche. Thank you for confirming this to everyone.
But not so much a douche, just a huge failure again. I mean, it's another completion of Dr. Horrible's failure. I mean, he gets close, but not quite takes the prize.
Right.
And now he's got Captain Hammer's boot on his face, and he's got his death ray.
And then things get really bad.
That's when they take the twist. This is where Joss was like, and now.
Well, you know what? This was projected. Even if it wasn't a Joss Whedon piece, the tension building to tragedy had been. I mean, it was telegraphed the whole time. It was coming. Something bad is coming. Now it's either going to be the complete downfall of Dr. Horrible, or somebody's death, or the complete conversion of Dr. Horrible into someone who truly is evil, or what really happens. Penny gets croaked.
Well, another one of his failures, his damaged death ray explodes in Captain Hammer's hands.
Right.
And Captain Hammer is wounded. And he can't handle it. Is this what pain feels like?
Yes, he turns into a big puss. He turns into the biggest puss.
Yeah.
Oh, and whines like a little girl.
He totally pusses out.
Is this what other people feel?
Yes, he suddenly gets empathy. Oh my God.
Bobby, someone maternal. And Dr. Horrible's like, I've won. And he stands up, and then you see him turn, and his face crumbles. And you're like, God damn it, Joss, you got me again.
Yeah. So Penny gets dead.
Is mortally wounded, yes. And when the worst thing about her death is she still thinks Captain Hammer is the most wonderful thing in the world.
Yeah, he was trying to save her.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, though, that, you know, last words of people have this very poignant feel in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that someone says last tends to resonate with people, because if you have one last thing to say, the last thing someone is going to ever remember you saying, what is it going to be? And you want to make those things poignant. And it's done in cinema. And the one thing that Penny says, because they say that one of the last senses to go when you're dying is hearing. And so the only thing she identifies is the sound of the voice that's talking to her.
Mm-hmm.
And what she hears is, Penny, are you okay? You're going to be all right. And she only knows it is Billy. And her last words are, Billy, don't worry. Captain Hammer will save us.
Yeah.
And then goes limp. And so it's there that she sees him as Billy, right? In her last moments, he is there for her. But the last thing that's on her mind is, the person that I've been involved with will save you. The person you have just horribly hurt and sent packing. And it just reinforces the fact that it is his failure that has killed her. And it's just crushing.
What was I going to say? Because it was a good follow-up to that.
Wait for it. It'll come to you.
It's that he appeared to have cracked earlier.
Mm-hmm.
As, you know, his personality, his soul, his MO, everything about him turned a shade darker.
Mm-hmm.
And if that was a crack before, that completed the fracture. He broke in that moment. And he became everything that he wanted to become. Right then and there. that was the moment when he became Dr. Horrible.
When he decided to shed the last parts of him that were Billy and cast them aside, all but the very core of his being, which we'll get to at the last words of the piece.
Right.
He casts aside everything he is because everything Billy wanted is gone and has been sacrificed in the name of Dr. Horrible's needs.
In a way it's almost an interesting mirror to like how Spider-Man's origin story is. Because so the origin is he gets his powers, but he doesn't immediately become a superhero.
Yeah, he doesn't nut up right away. He's like, horrible tragedy.
Hey, you know what? I could become famous with these powers. I can get money. I can be awesome. You know, and that's kind of how Dr. Horrible sees himself. He doesn't fully realize the ramifications of what he can do and how it hurts people.
Right, because he's too focused on his own needs.
Hey, freezing people? That doesn't hurt anybody. That's harmless. That's a victimless crime.
Yep. They can't move. They'll wake up and be just fine.
Everything will be fine. What do they care? They're just not there for a few minutes. But he sees exactly what his actions can cause. It causes the one goal he had that was not Dr. Horrible, that was Billy's, is gone. And it's not that he failed at it. It no longer exists.
It's gone. It's been wiped away. It has been sacrificed in the name of... He had to choose. He is given a choice. And we talk about this in role-playing games all the time. Interesting choices. And he made a choice. He wants to be a supervillain more than he wants to be happy with her.
But at one point, because of his actions... The choice was eventually taken away from him. Ultimately, he didn't actually get to make the final choice.
No, he didn't. But his actions
caused him. He set the ball rolling.
He had to reap the seeds that he had planted in the first part of this piece that had grown, and he had continued to further that growth with his decisions until he had to basically come to terms with the choices he had made.
And that's the
he
one.
Decided to turn the stun ray into a death ray. Mm-hmm. If he hadn't have done that, would it have exploded? I don't think so.
Well, the only reason it exploded was it was damaged when Captain Hammer punched him and he dropped it.
Mm-hmm. But if it was a stun ray, it wouldn't have been as intensely designed, a lower power source. It probably wouldn't have exploded.
He also might not have choked.
Exactly.
Because what's the harm in stunning him? He's already frozen.
Yep. Stun him. He's down for 12 hours. I can do whatever I want. I can, and in that way, he could have proven, I am mightier than you. I can strike you down, and you will live to fight another day, but I can show I have power over you.
Right.
Yeah. But that, to Captain Hammer, that wouldn't mean anything.
No, because he's a douche, and his doucheness outweighs his sense of honor.
That's the nice little thing, dovetail at the end. Here we have Captain Hammer who can't feel anything. That's why he's such a douche. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you have Billy Dr. Horrible who feels too much.
He does.
And at the end, they're reversed.
And so we head into the final song here, which is Everything You Ever, which closes out the piece. And he picks up Penny's body, places her on the stretcher for the paramedics, and it goes into a montage that closes out the piece, and it shows him really becoming the supervillain that he will be. And interspersed between a party where he's in his apartment with all sorts of supervillains that have been mentioned, like Hourglass, and then Bait and Switch, and then the Bad Horse Trio,
the Purple Pimp,
Pink Puncher, Purple Pimp is the last one, and then he meets the Evil League of Evil.
And then he puts on a red coat, black gloves, and more aggressive-looking welding goggles. He opens the door to see the Evil League of Evil, which, if I understand it correctly, when Joss Whedon was writing this, he said, I have not specced out who the Evil League of Evil is. Propose your villains that would be in the EVL.
Uh-huh.
Or, what, ELL, Evil League of Evil. No, ELE. There's the acronym. Thanks, Sam. And so I guess one of the entries for this, someone wrote, it's Chair or Mr. Chair. And they're like, really? What's Mr. Chair? He's a chair who, whenever you're moving around in the dark of your apartment or home, will move slightly out of the way so you stub your toe. Every time. It's like, really? Okay, don't call us, we'll call you. And so I finally found a list of who these villains are. It's Ty Dye, Snake Bite, Professor Normal, Dead Bowie, Fake Thomas Jefferson, Furry Laika, and of course, the man, or rather, the equine himself, Bad Horse.
Which is just a horse.
And you're like, his evil death whinny. You're like, is this guy like a dude in a horse outfit?
Nope.
Or is he a, like a half minotaur deal? Nope. He's a horse.
It's just a horse.
It's just a horse.
But he's a bad horse.
He is a bad. And that was so great when they're in the laundromat and he says, I want to be an achiever. Like Bad Horse. And Penny is horrified and is like, the thoroughbred of sin? And he pauses and is like, oh shit. And he kind of thinks, he goes, I meant Gandhi.
Yeah.
Nice save. Good job, buddy.
Yeah.
And so now you get into the last
chorus,
line or two of Everything You Ever. And it is amazing.
Yeah. Now the nightmare is real. Now Dr. Horrible is here to make you quake in fear, to make the whole world kneel. Everything you ever. And I won't feel a thing.
A thing.
And I love how they cut back to him standing there in his civvies, just in front of, you know, at his where he did his blog.
At his most raw.
And he just looks
exhausted.
Defeated and exhausted.
Crushed.
Yeah, just spent. He just
and
looks tired.
And it shows you that in the ashen ruin that is Everything Billy Wanted, he is still there.
Yeah. Yeah. He got everything you wanted. And everything you ever wanted.
Yep. But the thing is, he's sitting there going, you get the impression that Billy is wiped away, that everything that person is now Dr. Horrible. And you get this littlest, you know, you see he is overjoyed. The music is kind of somber, but you feel somber for more of the people that are experiencing, you know, Dr. Horrible's actions.
What I love about this story, I love two things about the story. One, I'm a sucker for the story that's basically what's delivered here at the end is the story of here's what I wish for and I get it, but it's nothing like I expected.
Exactly. It's
be you, careful what it's, you wish for, basically.
Exactly.
I love stories where that is the resolution, where something is so strongly desired, but without thought of what the ramifications of getting your heartfelt desires are. And then when you get it, you realize just everything you went through to get it may not have been worth it.
Yep.
And I love that. I love that.
You get the role reversal between the villain and the hero.
Yeah, and that's okay, but I really like, I really just like the concept of that type of story.
Right.
It's one of the story archetypes,
crime doesn't pay. I mean,
it's the idea that, you know, everyone wants something that they aren't, right?
And when they get it, so they find out it really wasn't worth it, or it
exactly
was,
right. There's like a, it's, there's like a there was a graphic novel called Emperor Doom, a number of years ago, and basically, Dr. Doom figures out a way to take over the world. He captures Purple Man, and Purple Man's powers is that he can control people, and he like amps up his powers and ends up basically taking over the whole world. And once he's taken over the whole world and like figured out starvation, like there's no more starvation. Because this was done in like the late 80s when that was like one of the big calls to action was
we are the world.
We have to save all the starving people everywhere else. So he like figures out, hey, you know what? As long as there's someone in charge who just has the authority to just say, do this, we can fix all these little problems and everybody will be happy. But he gets to a point where it's like he fixes all the world's problems, and no one will rise up against him because nobody can. Nobody can. Mm-hmm. And then,
nobody's able to.
And then nobody wants to because everything he does to fix the problems actually turn him into a benevolent leader. And he's like, wait a minute. Where's the interesting part in this life?
Right. There's no more challenges.
There is no more challenges. Yeah,
that is Daryl's juxtaposition of villain and hero.
Yeah. He becomes the hero.
But I don't think that's totally the impact of the story. The point is that he wants to be a supervillain, and he thinks that if I do that, everything will be okay. But he finds something
fix all
he
my
wants
problems.
To cling to about being a civilian.
Right. It's going to fix all my problems. I will be noticed. I will be popular. I will be important.
Exactly. And he finds something he wants, and he ends up having to sacrifice that to get his dream. And he thought that I won't care about, you know, when I look back, I won't care about any of these people I knew in high school.
Right.
They will be just horrible memories that I will show up in a helicopter and step out and say, how tiny and insignificant you are. But
he can, and he can do that. But.
He can, but he gets there and he says, and I won't feel. And he goes, a thing.
Yeah.
I've had to sacrifice what meant most to me,
no satisfaction.
Not to this person I wanted to be.
Right, and what's brilliant is he actually gets all those things. The groupies are no longer groupies of Captain Hammer. They're groupies of Dr. Horrible.
Right. Oh, yeah. He can go out and get with the banging.
Yeah. That was the one thing that I loved about the story. And now I've blanked on what the other one was. Damn it. Go ahead. You were going to say something?
Well, it's... The one thing you see in the whole transition from beginning to end is, here I am, I'm nobody, now I'm somebody. I'm on the top of the world, and it means nothing.
Right.
I mean, I've thrown it all away. Because the one thing I wanted to get wasn't what I wanted. I wanted the girl, I got this instead. And
yeah.
It turned out to be empty.
I still can't think of what it was that was going to... The other thing about this that...
No, that's a nice point where we start off as this cute little comedy and we ended up being this rather dark tragedy at the end.
But he did the same thing with Buffy. Oh, it's a 14-year-old that becomes a vampire slayer. Really?
It took him how many seasons to get to that point? Here we did it in 40 minutes.
What I love
he has developed his craft.
The other thing that I love about this story is when you're first introduced to this story, it appears that it's going to be a love story.
Yep.
In one fashion. It appears to be a romantic comedy in some ways. What it ends up being is an origin story, though. For a character that, when you start watching it, appears to be an established character. But it's really, it's more a true origin story of how this guy really became Dr. Evil. It's like the Behind the Music episode, you know? It's where we really dig in and find out this is how it really went down. It's like, yeah, he played at being a bad guy before, but now he is a bad guy. And I would love to see a little more about the character. I don't know that you could do too much more interesting, but it would be interesting to see just another, like one more act to see just how far down the rabbit hole he has fallen. To see just how bad is he, and is there anything that could redeem him and save him, or is he just a tragic character? And by the same token, has Captain Hammer changed at all through this?
Well, yeah, has he now been able to now feel something or a little empathy, what it's like for everybody else? Is he a little less of a douche about it?
Right. Does he man up and become the hero?
A real one.
A real one.
Not
this time.
Not a fake one.
Right. Not.
That would be great to see.
It would be interesting to see. That's really all I have to say about this. That's all I've got to say about that.
I'm pretty much tapped out, I gotta say. I didn't think I would be so soon, but then again, we've gone
soon.
How long?
Yeah, so soon. We're working on an hour 35 right now.
Oh God, long episode. That's what you do to get me on the mic. I give you longer content.
Booyah.
Well, we have such a rich vein of war here to mine, so...
That's an awesome pun, considering our previous conversations.
Mm-hmm. I thought you'd like it.
But-ups!
All right. Next week, Let Me In. The week after that, Sucker Punch. The week after that,
we don't know.
Question mark? Comrade question?
We are heading very quickly toward episode 200.
Oh, God. Which, I remember episode 100. That was a cluster.
Oh, that was the double episode 100?
So are you going to have to do like a four-episode episode 200 to stay with
that? That may happen. At this point, episode 200 tentatively will be recorded at Archon.
Oh God!
Yeah, yeah. I've submitted my program survey, and I've requested that we are doing Backseat Producers 200 at Archon. I've also requested that we do it in the convention space in the hotel, not in the convention space, because in the convention space, they frown upon bringing your own beverages.
Oh, no.
So I hope that we can get it in the hotel space where we might be able
to. Just for the record, that's not the convention committee's problem. It's a problem with the convention center.
I understand that. That's why I know it's not the convention committee. I know that's the convention
it
center.
It's the
rule.
Problem dealing with the convention center, who are the total jerkwads.
That's why I requested convention space in the hotel. No. Right. Because the hotel is more lenient about that.
Right, they don't really give a shit.
Exactly. So, if we can get part of the convention space in the hotel, that means we can have our own drinks there.
Hell, they'll bring them to you.
That's true as well.
Nice.
So, hopefully we will be doing episode 200 at Archon. It may mean we have a special episode here or there just to make do.
Well, the pre-show.
Well,
that is going to be pretty awesome. Considering I just bought tickets to Archon, so I would be there.
Yeah, part of our issue is technically we would, if we just record episodes without recording any special episodes between then and now, we would actually record episode 200 about a week or a week and a half before Archon. So we're going to have a couple of special episodes in between. Just so that
to fill it out,
to fill it out, and to actually give us a little bit of buffer, so that I don't have to come home from Archon on Sunday
and try
and then release an episode for Monday. That's not gonna work.
Yeah, take a little editing time there.
Yeah, that'd be a little rough.
Give myself a little bit of time, and who knows? We may have quite a bit of content.
Yes, it'll take some time to sort through it.
Oh,
because. There are a number of podcasters coming to Archon this year that I am personally aware of. There's all the Backseat Producers. I think Deuce may even show up. All of Backseat Box Office. Not all the Backseat Reality, because Julie won't go to quote unquote that geeky thing that you guys do. not Backseat Quickies, because Scott is from Canada.
Yeah, Toronto area.
Yeah.
The GTA.
Yeah, apparently. And apparently, he is not flush with cash the way some people are and can actually travel. So it's a little more difficult for him to make it. But we're going to have Sam's coming. PC Herring, who did the patio book Cybrosis. He's supposed to be coming. T and Pip might be there.
Mm-hmm. God!
Yeah, so it could be quite the podcast outing. We'll have I don't know if any of the other podcast guys. I would bet Eric will be there. I don't know about Luke. Luke sometimes does, sometimes doesn't come. I think he'll probably
better come. I gotta meet that guy.
Oh, we'll make that happen. We'll make him come out then.
Better.
If nothing else for Sausage Fest. If nothing else, we'll make him come out for Sausage Fest. So
no, he better. I got sausage for him. It's happening. That's real.
All right. Thank you, Sam, for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me.
For bringing the love of Dr. Horrible.
I'd like to think that. You know, unfortunately, I know I have some of Adam's mannerisms, which is kind of gross, but I really got to pee right now. So it's almost like he's here, except
that's fitting.
Less bitter in spirit.
That's fitting.
And you got to, taco, too.
And, you know, you can always change your name.
I have tacos, too.
Yeah. Yeah, he does tend to start the episode with a taco. Yeah, you know, at some point, the next time you come on, you can always change your name.
I can.
Because he does that too.
Someone else.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
Yep. Thanks for showing up.
Good night.
Bye.
Have a good one, folks.